And so all the free SEO optimized tool that you would build, you can rank for many, many long tail keywords and then sell your main products. All the mini tools that we built, like I think we built more than one per month. So at the end, we had like 40 SEO optimized mini tools, and all them together was bringing like we're bringing 70% of the traffic.
You just gave away a gem. Someone's gonna listen to that, and it's gonna spend the next 12 months of their lives just building mini tools. You know, yeah, I'm excited to have this conversation. I've been following you for a long time, and when you sold Tweet Hunter and you sold Taplio for $10 million, I was like, okay, this guy is legit. And just seeing your process of how you come up with an idea, how you name it, how you come up with unconventional ways to grow it. How you care about design and copy, I was like, I need to get this guy on the podcast. So thank you for coming on.
That's pretty cool. Thank you.
So what is on your mind these days?
When you invited me, I spent hours thinking about ideas, and the thing is, it always goes the same way. First of all, you have this like blank page where you have no idea at all. And you just get one. You try to like go a little bit deeper on this idea, and then it's like never ending flow of ideas. And so I have one thing that I find it very, very interesting. It may be something a bit boring, but I just can't stop thinking about brand and influencers matching.
Yep.
It's something that we have seen over and over. And I really thought that the space was dead, because like you have hundreds of startups doing that, until I noticed this new thing like passion fruits. Do you know about passion fruits?
I do, but tell people what passion fruit is.
It's a startup that basically makes you able as a creator to build like packages of ready to go sponsorships. Like you want to offer a sponsorship for a tweet or for a YouTube video or anything else. You can just build these sponsorships, and brand can very easily book them like with payment calendar. And what's very awesome about that is, as brand, when I start booking like a sponsored tweets, they open this channel of communication through like no sign up email flow, which is super, super convenient for brand and creators to use. And so I noticed them as a client first, and I couldn't stop thinking about that, because to be 100% honest, before I started doing any startups, I thought about this. Like I thought about brand and influencers, and for me, the space was 100% saturated. Like we couldn't innovate in that. Like there's just nothing to do. And you know, just when it was in 2015, and just so many things were created in this space since that time, and so. My point here is that there's just so much things to do here. Like when you think that space is saturated, you can just do 100 more things.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be real with you too. So I thought that the space was saturated too. There is like 100 of these marketplace startups. I think what was interesting about Passion Fruit is they focused on creators like me and you. So like the B2B type creators. And the other thing that they did was they allowed creators who had newsletters to create almost like a link tree, but for sponsorships. So it was like a really easy way to create a profile where it's like, okay, gregeisenberg.com is an, you know, is a newsletter. There's 75,000 people. A sponsorship costs X amount of dollars. And it was just like a beautiful webpage. So I think the question I have here is, okay, I buy the point. I agree that sometimes you can look at a space and it's overloading with startups. And that's the creator space right now. But what would you build if you can build anything in this space?
So I think you've nailed what they've nailed. Like they just build this super simple to use portfolio that will just make creators money. And I think that you can totally reverse the space. Like, do it not for creators but for brand. Like find a way to create this Linktree like page for brands where as a creator, I can just go and I can just see what kind of sponsorship a brand would like.
Quick ad break. Let me tell you about a business I invested in. It's called boringmarketing.com. So a few years ago, I met this group of people that were some of the best SEO experts in the world. They were behind getting some of the biggest companies found on Google. And the secret sauce is they've got a set of technology and AI that could help you outrank your competition. So for my own businesses, I wanted that. I didn't want to have to rely on Mark Zuckerberg. I didn't want to depend on ads to drive customers to my businesses. I wanted to rank high in Google. That's why I like SEO, and that's why I use boringmarketing.com, and that's why I invested in it. They're so confident in their approach that they offer a 30-day sprint with 100% money-back guarantee. Who does that nowadays? So check it out. Highly recommend boringmarketing.com.
And find a way. I think the hardest to do here is curation and moderation, because obviously you would have like a chunk creators, like shitty creators applying. But if you find a way to use AI in a good way to rank, sort, and grade the creators coming in, you can just make the life of brands and agencies super easy by just creating this inbound flow of creators.
So that's really interesting. So something happened to me for the first time ever recently where I had a brand reach out to me. I'm just going to pull up the email. So Logitech reached out to me and they're launching this new product and they wanted to like send it to me. And then they're like, we want like a text-based post and a YouTube video. Obviously I didn't do it because like, I don't use any Logitech products and it's not really in my model. Like my model is to give a lot of value away for free. And in the future, hopefully that pays back to me somehow. But I think it's really interesting that you have brands. What are brands doing? They're either going to marketplaces or they're going to agencies to find these creators and deals, or they're just cold DMing people. Like they're just saying like, hey, you're an interesting YouTube channel. So I think what you're suggesting is to flip the model on its head. What you're saying is Logitech should actually create a page and say like, we're really interested to do this. Right? Is that what you're saying?
It's exactly this. And I'm suggesting this because we kind of did it with Tweet Hunter. Like I think it was like at the peak of our growth, we realized that it made a lot of sense for us to sponsor a lot of people. Like because we are a Twitter product, obviously it's super relevant to sponsor Twitter creators. But we were like missing good creators to sponsor. And so we opened this page saying, hey, we want to sponsor creators. This is a rough, just plug your Twitter. And this is a rough calculation of how much we would pay you. If this is good enough for you, just apply. We would get an email and we'll start the conversation there. It was super simple product, just one page. The calculation was super dumb. I think you can do something very good because it just worked. Like when we just tweeted about that, we got hundreds of applications. It became a nightmare to sort them and to spot the good ones. So that's the real issue to solve.
So what would the business model there be?
So if you want to align interests, you can maybe take a cut on the sponsorship that you make the brand able to sign. But obviously, I would not do that at the very beginning because it would just make everything more complicated. If you want to just sell the shovel, just a regular subscription based on maybe the brand size would be maybe the easiest to begin with. What do you think?
Yeah, I think obviously what a lot of marketplaces do is they charge for access. But you can't charge if you're just beginning. You can't go to L'Oreal and say, or Logitech and be like, hey, it's going to be $500 a month for access to this, and we're going to take a cut of whatever the transaction is going to be, because when you're starting out, you are no one. Like, that's the reality. And that's the thing that a lot of people don't say is you're starting off with like no credibility or very little credibility. Your goal right now is to prove that you can create value. So I think what you do is initially you just prove out that you can actually do this thing. So get the brands on board. Don't charge anything. Once you get the brands on board, you're going to get the creators on board, which is beautiful, right? And then eventually you can take a cut. Eventually you can take a 10 to 20% cut. And some of these brand deals, like I think Logitech wanted to pay me like 10 grand for like a text post, you know? It's like,
and I think,
yeah.
Just let me suggest slightly different way. Like you, as you said, like you make it very easy for both people to just jump in. You make it easy for brands to just create the space. They have this one page, beautiful page where creators can just book a sponsorship. But then what they realize is that it's super messy. They get hundreds of applications, and the service that you offer is moderation, sorting, and like AI creation of all the inbounds offers that they get, and you charge for that. Like you charge for the handling of the moderation and booking of the sponsorships, which is the hardest part of any sponsorship. Like the back and forth of how of like the brand wanting to the creator to respect their guidelines, to validate the post, that's the hardest part. If you can just provide value on these steps, that would be awesome.
And how would you go about getting the brands? Like, how do you go from having no brands to 25 brands?
What's interesting is you can probably scrap, I don't know, like Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and try to find many, many, many contents which are sponsorships. The way I would do it, I'm pretty sure that on Twitter you have keywords that are like in 90% of sponsorships, like something like sponsored by or together with. Think you have these stuffs on newsletters. So I guess you can build a list of brands who sponsor stuff right now and just reach out to them with cold emailing.
Yeah, I think use a couple of those tools. I think that's great. I think one of the things I was thinking about is you do really need to niche down a little bit. Like, you can't be like the creator, you know, network for everyone. So I think I'd probably start, if I was building this, in the B2B space. So I'd probably look at passion fruit, you know? I'd probably go on passion fruit and say like, who's, you know, who are the top creators? And on passion fruit, they actually like list the top creators. They list like, you know, you've got Ali Abdaal, you've got Islo, the Notion guy, you've got, you know, Dan Goh, who's a high performance coach, all these people. So I'd reach out to them, and then I would see, I'd make a Airtable or Google Sheet of over the last 12 months, who has sponsored an Ali Abdaal newsletter or YouTube video. And you create this list and this create this database, which, by the way, you later use as a lead magnet. Right?
Super cool. Yeah.
So once you scrape all of passion fruit And sorry, Passion Fruit, if you're listening to this and you're like, that's against my terms of service. So, you know, this is, you know, I don't know if it's against the terms of service, but let's just say you can go and do that. Then you create this this database, and then you say to people like, hey, do you want to see who's sponsoring the world's largest newsletters? You know, you put some Twitter ads behind that. All of a sudden, you're getting leads at 50 cents to $1.50 a lead.
I would do something else. Like based on just what you've just said, I would try to do a tool, because like as a brand, if I want to sponsor a Twitter creator to promote my AI products, I want to know I want to like not mess up the tweets, and so I want to have like a library of past sponsorships. Which could be like tweets, YouTube videos, stuff that worked very well. And because I want to get inspired. And so based on what you've just said, I would try to build this library and to make it a tool. Because if you make a tool and you build like a tool which would rank for best sponsorship in marketing or best sponsorship in AI or best sponsorship in like e-commerce, you can rank for many, many long tail keywords and then sell your main products.
And would you charge for that tool?
No, definitely not. Like I would try to make a SEO optimized tool with many, many super specialized pages, like one page for e-commerce, one page for coordinating, etc. Like lists, just libraries of the best sponsorships that you can find on any niche.
Yeah, dude, this is actually a good idea.
You want to build that?
Yeah, I mean, kind of. I do think I like it because it's one of those ideas that you can see how you'd connect the dots. Like you start with the Twitter account that is just showcasing who's sponsoring who and what sort of click-through rates you're probably getting and how much money they're making and. You tell those stories on Twitter, maybe YouTube also. Then you convert those people to the lead magnets, really, to the tools, to the databases. You get them to you just segment them between brands and creators. So you essentially create two different lists, and then your goal is to nurture both sides of the list. And then you create a simple product for them to connect them. So I like this idea.
But what I love with this kind of products is that you can, like all the Linktree products, they generate a lot of basically static web pages for clients. And if you have things like custom domains and clients have pretty good domains, by offering your service for free, you can generate a lot of backlinks by just linking back to your main product on the many, many web pages that you create for your clients. So you can build SEO very fast that way. And so all the free SEO optimized tool that you would build would be able to rank very fast too.
Was SEO a part of your strategy for Taplio and Tweet Hunter?
It shifted. Like for the first half of the journey, content, Twitter and LinkedIn was everything. And then it was just not enough. And all the mini tools that we built, like I think we built more than one per month. So at the end, we had like 40 SEO optimized mini tools. And all them together was bringing like, we're bringing like 70% of the traffic.
Yeah, that's a common thing I hear, is like using content to attract initially and always doing that in the background, and then using SEO and ads to supercharge as you scale. So that's yeah.
But what I found the craziest was like we know nothing basically, because among all the tools that we built, the one that was super well thought, like SEO research, didn't perform. And the crappy thing that I did on an evening based on an ID without even talking to my co-founder about it it just it performed above everything. Like our best performing minitune was something that we gave as a test to a developer that we wanted to hire. We had no hope on this tool.
And what tool was that?
It was download video from a LinkedIn post, and it ranked first for this. So it was a very low intense keyword for Taplio, but super high traffic, 1 million per month visitors, super crazy.
So people would, they would see, so they download a video and then.
And then we would say, just schedule this on Taplio or schedule this on Twitter to post on Twitter.
That's right. It. Yeah. And for people who don't know, Taplio is like an AI assisted or an AI tool to help you schedule and manage your LinkedIn. So like that makes a lot of sense, right? The people that are downloading videos are the people that are creating content. So you just have to figure out, like, the prompt for people is, whatever it is you're building, you have to say, what is a free tool that I can go and create that is going to generate a lot of top of the funnel? And it's a natural for them to use the tool and then use your tool.
That's a strategy that a few players were doing that a few years ago. Like a company that really inspired us was vid.io, this video editor. What I find crazy with how they are doing is that they have, I think they have like 50 tools, like things like crop a video or compress a video. But what's crazy is that every single one of these tools, they take your inputs, which is like a video file, and then when you upload your video, they redirect to their main tool, like vid.io, and you are actually inside the tool without even signing up, without paying for anything. So it's like, it's very cost efficient because it's super easy for them to build a new tool since it's just a feature of their main tool. And then you are just like, you are inside vid.io. So you just want to use it a little bit more. And when you want to use a video editor, you just think about them, you know?
Totally. You just gave away a gem. Someone's going to listen to that and it's going to spend the next 12 months of their lives just building mini tools.
Well, I hope they are not doing it in the video space because I'm going hard.
Because you're going after it. It's okay. I mean, there's room for everyone. And I think like everyone has a perspective on it. And
but something, just let me add something to this story, because everyone out there is saying that Google is dying because of ChatGPT and like Perplexity and stuff like that. I don't know if that's true or not, but one thing that I know for sure is that it's going to be less true for requests that are based on an action. Like if you are looking for a tool to compress a video or to download a video from LinkedIn, it's very unlikely to me that you're going to query that on ChatGPT because you are looking for a tool. And so you're going to do that on Google to then be redirected to another tool because that's what you want. And so that's why I think the mini tool strategy is still something that I would just double down on.
I also think that my prediction is tools will be embedded within a lot of these platforms. So right now, when you use Perplexity or use ChatGPT, really what you're getting back is mostly text. You know, sometimes you're getting some links or some images. And over time, what you're going to see is it's going to be more and more rich media from these platforms, images, videos, and stuff like that. But I think you're really going to start to see tools. So you're going to go on to ChatGPT and say, you know, hey, I'm thinking about taking out a 30-year mortgage at 7%. My down payment is $150,000. Do you think I should do this? Or you know, here's my net worth. You know, what do you think I should do? Today, that response is just going to be mostly text. Tomorrow, what that response is going to be is mostly some text, some image, some video, and a calculator. that Tebow's created, and you know, and then it's going to link back to whatever startup Tebow's created, thus getting him more traffic, and then also introducing that person to Tebow's brand.
It's possible, but I don't see an easy way to get there because they tried that. Like they did that with plugins, and then they did that with custom GPTs. And I have no numbers to support what I'm going to say, but it seems to me that it is a failure, and that no one is. You have small use cases when you will use a custom GPT, but in most cases you will not.
Totally.
What do you think?
I think it's really. I hear what you're saying. I mean, what have we learned from ChatGPT and Perplexity is that they scrape a lot of information. Like LLMs scrape a lot of information. If we assume that they are scraping information, I got to think that they're going to scrape tools in the future. And I don't know how they do it. And when I say tomorrow this is going to happen, I don't really mean tomorrow, but I do mean like within the next 5 years. I think where search engines generally go is where the best possible experience is. And I just happen to think that if you embed a tool within a search engine experience, i.e. if you search for something, if you have something that you want, you have a question and you want an answer for, it only makes the experience way better if there's a tool to help you figure out the answer to your question.
What's very true is that Google had absolutely no incentive for doing that before.
Yes.
Because they want people to click on links. Which is not the case anymore with platforms like Perplexity and like the coming Search GPT. So we'll see. Maybe you're right.
Yeah, in the past, Google was fat, rich, and happy, just doing status quo. But things have changed, and now it is a game of user experience. So I think knowing that, why does this matter to the people that are listening and to me and you is just that, okay, well, if we know that they're going to try to increase user experience, what are the things that we need to create such that we get ranked? And, one of those things is tools. So I think that's a big insight. And
based on what you've just said, I would heavily invest in replying to Quora questions and Reddit questions, because that's probably where a lot of LLMs are going to get their answers. And so if you're able to be like to the question, what's the best sushi restaurant
in Paris?
Yeah. What's the best sushi restaurant in Paris? If you're able to just plug your restaurants and have it as the top upvoted answers on Reddit, you're going to imagine that this is going to pop when people query LLMs with this exact same question. That's going to be super powerful.
Yeah, and the mistake I think a lot of people make is they use AI 100% to answer those questions. And going back to user experience, that's probably not the best experience, because you've seen some of these comments. Like you can tell right now, at least, if a comment is AI generated or not. I think like the ones that have like stories associated with it. I walked into this, the sushi restaurant in the, Bastille neighborhood in Paris. And I at first like the smell was like horrible. And I was like, what have I gotten myself into? But then I sat down and someone approached me and her name was Jenny. And we had this long talk about how, I was in Naoshima and there was another sushi restaurant. And then I had, this Toro that was sent to me and it was incredible and it was mouthwatering. The human experience in creating content, I think, is undervalued right now. That doesn't mean you have to be 100% human generated. It just means that combining AI with humans, I think, is going to be the path forward. And I do agree that answering questions is underrated.
It's super funny that you're saying that, because I had these debates very short time ago, and my first reaction to this was like, this is just that AI is not good enough for now. But I don't see why with even without better LLMs, but with proper context and proper instruction, I don't see how you would not have a better system that would reply exactly like you just said. The key thing is to have like a human touch, human emotions, and errors. Like you have to make it super willing to do to go in crazy ways in like very original stuff. But I don't see how this would not happen.
So it'll always be a cat and mouse game between the LLMs and content.
I don't know if you noticed that, but I'm following very closely this guy, like Level CEO on Twitter. And he started doing something that I find a bit crazy, is every time he thinks that someone answers with an AI reply to his tweets, he just block. And I just couldn't stop thinking, like, what's his error rates? Like how many people he's blocking, thinking that they are like AI and they are not.
I mean, I think that there's the average person. If the average person did that, you know, they would probably a lot of mistakes or a good amount of mistakes. Peter Levels, probably not. I mean, there's this one guy who has a well-known podcast, who was an executive at one of the biggest tech companies in the world. And he replies to all my LinkedIn or a lot of my LinkedIn posts and Twitter posts, and it's 100% AI generated. And I've been thinking about it, should I reach out to this guy? Like, I've met him twice, but should I reach out to this guy and be like, hey dude, like, it is so obvious that you're using some AI tool and it's like really, really hurting your brand. Like, you are an executive of like a multi-$100 billion company. I think in the B2B space, don't do it. I don't think so. I don't think it's worth it being 100%. But going back to what I was saying, cat and mouse, number one. Number two is, okay, if it's cat and mouse and text becomes so good that it's almost indistinguishable, well, then photos and videos are going to be valued highly. So not only will you have to create text about that sushi restaurant experience, but you'll have to actually take a photo of that Toro. And they're going to be able to tell, is that a photo taken from an iPhone at this point, 20, an iPhone 20, and were you actually sitting there? Or was it, you know, created with DALL-E 8 at this point?
Yeah, but like even that, I was super surprised when I saw this tweet of someone sharing Midjourney's prompts. And he said that by adding like iPhone photos, you get much more realistic contents from Midjourney, but not in a beautiful way, but like more like in a crappy way, like the crappy way that you would take a photo at a restaurant because it's like you're moving or it's not properly cropped, things like that. Like it's a little bit, I don't know how to say that, but in reverse, or see my point?
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, I don't know where we're going with this, but it's going to be fun to watch.
It's going to be fun to watch. I think where we're going with it, like we'll move on to your next idea, but I think it's just like you kind of want to, the upside of but you doing, sorry, go ahead.
But maybe that's the next idea, because like imagine building a suite of tool where like the content that you will publish is like certified no AI, like the product itself is an anti AI positioning, because using this tool you are like certified to be a genuine human using a tool by hand.
Yeah, I mean, Scott Belsky, the chief product officer of Adobe, once told me that just this idea around when you walk into a grocery store, you see labels, and on the labels, you could see what's in the product, right? You can see if there's seed oils, you can see if there's water, you can see how much sugar there is, all these things. And when it comes to social products and digital products, we don't really have nutrition labels. And when it comes to content, we definitely don't have nutrition labels. We just see the content. Now, Instagram is doing, and TikTok is are doing, you know, this video was made by, with this filter. So there is a little bit of, you can see this video was made by this filter. So there's starting to be like the nutrition label, but it's very just tip of the iceberg. The idea that you're talking about, which is like essentially organic content, just like how we have organic food and non-organic content, which is AI generated, is really compelling. I just don't know how you create a business out of it.
It's a good question. Like, I was just wondering if you could have like some kind of, it would not be a label, but some kind of like Twitter scheduler, like Twitter was, like which you would enjoy promoting publicly because it doesn't have AI. I'm wondering if we'll not see a suite of products coming in the next few years, which are like no AI in that, no AI in them, but they still need to be great. But by not having AI to generate contents, people would just be happy to promote them because they would be promoting themselves as no AI users.
I think one of the reasons why we saw Be Real hit like 20 million DAUs or whatever it was because you were seeing the rise of filters and AI content.
Exactly.
And that product was, you know, it ended up not really working out, but the reason why I think it took off is there was like this collective feeling that we all had that we were getting sick and tired of filters and AI content. So that insight, I think, is really good. How that manifests into a business, I think probably there's probably a social app idea. Like there's probably another version of a social network that exists that just encapsulates everything that we hate about social networks today, which is AI generated filters, negative places. So just, you know, when I go, I was just on Twitter right before this, and it was just like, I'm seeing like video, like horrible videos of war and people arguing about politics. And 100% organic content, I think, would be the answer. So I think the ideas I have for this is you either create a social network, hard to do, have to raise money. So good luck. Or you build services businesses that help companies create organic content, subscription based, content type of ideas, for people. I'm, you know, off the top of my head, that's all I got.
Yeah. But this idea keeps me very busy, you know, because I'm working on this, tool. I don't know if you noticed, like it's called SuperX.so. So it's like a Twitter extension it's a Chrome extension for X. And I think it has like the best analytics features. Like I've not seen anything close enough to SuperX. But then since it's a Chrome extension comes this idea of generating replies with AI. And if you do that, you are instantly categorized as a gray hat tool that's a bit shady and that will make Twitter way worse by just having more shitty contents. And so okay. I'm really thinking about like having this anti-AI positioning.
Yeah, totally. Anti-AI positioning, that's a key insight. I got to think more about that one. I think you are right on that.
I don't know. We'll see.
I think so. I got a good feeling about it because, like I said, people are thinking about it, and there's going to be benefits to. There are benefits to going anti AI, just like there's benefits to going AI. Right? I'm not saying like going AI is bad. I'm just saying there's some places that it makes sense, and some places it doesn't. And there's so much competition in the AI assisted, AI led landscape that there's probably a lot of opportunity in the human stuff.
And because of this competition, people are burning out. Like Level CEO and Danny Postma posted about this on X. They said that for sure their next product will be like a no AI product, just because of the insane competition they have. Just by talking about their AI products, the day they do so, you have like 10 competitors for sure that will jump on the ID.
Exactly. You know where you're not having a lot of, you know where you're not having 10 competitors? In anti-AI human stuff. That's for sure.
Yep.
So exactly. That's where the arbitrage is. Always look for the arbitrage. Always look where there's opportunity. So I like that.
For this, I would have a look at what the people behind Basecamp are doing, like
Jason Fried.
Yeah, exactly. Those guys, like they did this once studio, charging one-time fees for products. I would not be surprised if they continue doing no AI tools. And I would be very interested in what their, like, I will look for what their next product will be.
Totally, yeah. I'm following them, and I do think they're really good at sniffing out how people are feeling. I.e.
Yeah, and doing this like anti-positioning.
Yeah, anti-positioning is just, it's so underrated. Yep. So underrated, because you know when you're posting something on Twitter, if everything looks the same, you're not going to stop and you're just going to keep scrolling. But when you see something that's in the zeitgeist and just feels, smells, tastes different, then you're stopping, you're sharing, you're replying, you're engaging. So that's where the arbitrage is. Thibaut, this has been really fun. You're a legend. Where could people find more about you and your products?
The easiest is on X. I'm Thibaut _ maker there. And my best products, like the one that keeps me busy right now, is Revit.ai. It's a video editor to build short form videos. I hope that people will like it.
Cool. Yeah, check it out. Obviously, you know what time it is. Go to YouTube, like this video, comment on video so people hear more about Thibaut and his great ideas. Hope this has been fun. And Thibaut, good seeing you. And hopefully next time in France or here in Quebec.
I would love to welcome you here. Thank you, Greg. All right. It was very awesome.
Later.